Paul Vandals,
the host of Curiosity Never Retires, from OLLI at American University. OLLI stands for the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, a national network of adult education organizations dedicated to helping mostly retired seniors teach and learn subjects they have been interested in for years. OLLI at American University in Washington, D.C., offers so many classes on so many subjects that we are producing these podcasts about some of them so you can decide which ones to take. Politics, science, languages, and literature are all part of OLLI's offerings. In this episode of Curiosity Never Retires, we'll look at three of the most famous female authors of English literature, the Bronte sisters, Emily, Charlotte, and Anne. And here to tell us about the course she's teaching on these three is Leslie Franz. Welcome, Leslie.
Hi, I'm very glad to be here.
Leslie, just to remind people of why the Bronte sisters are so well known, we should mention that they wrote three of the 19th century's best-selling novels. Emily wrote Wuthering Heights, Charlotte wrote Jane Eyre, and Anne wrote The Tenant of Wildfell Hall. But before we talk about the books, I want to talk about the three sisters themselves. There was nothing about their background that would have suggested they would become great authors, was there?
Not really. If you're looking from the outside in, you wouldn't think so. But if you know a little bit about their childhood, there was a lot of writing that went on in that household. The children read newspapers. They talked about politics at a young age. They were encouraged by their father to do this, and they mainly played games. They had a little set of soldiers that they turned into characters, and they played with these characters for years. The stories about the characters developed, and they wrote them down. So they wrote stories that they thought of as professional stories, and they wrote into little books that they bound. There's little tiny books. You can see them at Haworth Parsonage if you ever go there. They practiced writing their whole lives. So when they started writing fiction for publication, they were already very accomplished writers.
And their father was also a writer. I mean, not of novels, but of tracts and...
Yes, and their mother too. Yes. She died when they were young, but the letters that exist still between Maria and her husband are very well written. They were erudite people, good writers.
You've talked a little about, you know, their isolation and their unique upbringing, but there was also no small amount of hardship in their lives, even though they themselves would have seemed to be sort of middle class and comfortable. They went to schools that were difficult, and some of this found their way into their novels, plots, and characters.
I think so. There's a misconception about the father being very strict with them and not feeding them properly, and this was absolutely not true. He was a very good father. They didn't have meat restricted from their diet, nothing like that. But he was very worried about whether the children could support themselves. He knew that his daughters needed an education. He couldn't afford it. And then miraculously, this partially charity school for clergymen's daughters opened up, and he sent four of his daughters there. The oldest, Maria, went there, Elizabeth, Charlotte, and Emily. And it turned out the school was very badly run. It was the model for Lowood School in Jane Eyre. Two of the daughters died from having been to that school. And Charlotte said her growth was permanently stunted from starvation at that school for the months that she was there. Emily was there for the shortest amount of time and didn't seem to remember, but there's so much death in her novels, you sort of wonder if at some level she did remember what happened there. The other huge hardship that they faced was the failure of their brother Branwell. When you've got a family full of girls in the Victorian era and there's one boy, he's more or less expected to look out for the whole family when the father is gone. And Branwell was an alcoholic. He also got romantically involved with his employer's wife, and was sent home in disgrace. He was a tutor in the family where his sister Anne had been governess for 5 years. She got him the job. He had an affair with the mother. Anne left, and then Branwell was sent home in disgrace and then drank himself to death. So the sisters were living in a house with this man who was falling to pieces, throwing things, threatening suicide, had to be held down, all this. for quite some time, and this comes into their books too.
Besides all of that, all of which would have stopped many, many people, they, in addition, had to overcome the fact that they were women in a society which automatically discounted a lot of their contributions because of their gender. How did, talk to us a little bit about that.
They were very aware that women writers of fiction, well, if anything, were not taken seriously the way male writers were. And when they decided that they were going to write novels, they deliberately chose pseudonyms which could be either male or female. They didn't want to lie about being women, but they didn't want to identify themselves as women. The problems that women had, the legal position of women, certainly comes into their novels. The way property law worked, the way marriage law worked, all of them wrote about that. Mm-hmm. And all of them came in for severe criticism from the critics, especially when it was discovered for sure that they were women. Part of the problem was they chose the same last name in their pseudonyms. So they were Currer, Ellis, and Acton Bell. The novels of Emily and Anne were accepted by a publisher. The Professor by Charlotte was not accepted. This publisher is sitting on their work, and Charlotte took Jane Eyre to a different publisher. Her work came out first, and then the first publisher who had Emily's and Anne's work decided to cash in on this and said, these are novels by the famous author of Jane Eyre, which had been a huge bestseller. And Smith was angry because he had right of first refusal for anything she wrote after that. So Charlotte and Anne went to London together to show themselves to him and explained they had a third sister at home who was not leaving home. She didn't like to leave home and rarely did. But then he had to believe, of course, they were two different people and also that they were women. Mm-hmm. He said they were tiny.
And the three books that you're looking at in this course all came out more or less at the same time, right? That means like 1848, 1849, something like that, within a year or so of each other.
Yes, they all came out very quickly. The reader who had Jane Eyre on his desk stayed up all night reading it, went to his boss, said, we've got to publish this right away. They had that on the shelves in 6 weeks. In the 19th century, in 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then Newby cashed in on it. He brought out the Wuthering Heights and Agnes Grey very quickly after that.
So what kinds of comparisons can we make about themes and images and character arcs and like and things like that?
Yeah, that is such an interesting question. And we talk about that a lot in the class because you would think three sisters, same upbringing, and they talked about their work amongst themselves. They would walk around the dining room table and talk about their work after everybody else had gone to bed and exchange ideas, but their books are so different. They're very different from each other. And they would disagree strenuously about what should go into the book. So, for example, Emily and Anne insisted that a heroine had to be beautiful. And Charlotte said, oh no, she doesn't, and I'm gonna show you, and she did. The oldest and youngest sisters, Charlotte and Anne, were very distressed by the character of Heathcliff in Wuthering Heights. Characters like that shouldn't exist. They shouldn't be created. And Emily said, well, I'm doing it and watch me. So they're approaching the world very differently. Charlotte is writing, we call it a novel of special pleading, where she explains her own feelings in great detail in first person and shows, you may not agree with what I have done, but if you understand how I feel, you will know why I've done it. Whereas Emily pulls way back and takes this almost godlike view of the world and shows us a pattern which is unlike anything you will see anywhere in Victorian literature. Anne was very religious. She thought that the purpose of fiction was moral teaching, and that's how she wrote her novels. They don't sound preachy. They're excellent novels, but her purpose in writing was not self-expression, and it was not metaphysical. It was, let me help you be a better moral person.
And they were affected and conscious of the literature of their period. I mean, for instance, the poet Lord Byron was a great romantic figure of the period. And Byronic characters show up in these novels.
Oh, yes, they do. Rochester just checks all the boxes. He's absolutely a Byronic hero. Heathcliff is too, although he's such a troubled character, almost a demonic character. Anne didn't like the idea of a Byronic hero. And her book, The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, shows what sort of a marriage you might have if you were married to someone like that. There's a wonderful scene in it where Arthur Huntington, the Byronic hero that the heroine falls in love with, who has this wonderful upswept big hair, and she thinks he's got a big clever head under it, and he pushes his hair down and his head is flat. And he says, you can't expect me to be an intellectual, I'm paraphrasing. It's such an ironic flip of what the Byronic hero is supposed to be. It's all show, it's all hair in Anne's book. The sorts of themes and images that they use, a lot of them are similar, especially with Charlotte and Emily. They both use the moon for a symbol of feminine power, for example. They both use fire and ice a lot. This is straight from Milton. All of the girls had Paradise Lost practically memorized and referred back to it over and over again in their work. Anne uses much less figurative language than her sisters do, but I think it's because her purpose is different. This class has been a lot of fun. The people are in the class are so engaged and have wonderful insights. And this is true over and over again of all these students. Well, in the spring, I'll be teaching Brontes again. It was way over-enrolled this time, and Leslie asked if I could do it again, and I will do that in the spring. After that, I've had a lot of requests for Anna Karenina, so I think we'll tackle that either the following spring or fall.
Should be fascinating. Thank you for coming in and talking to us about both of those classes.
Oh, thank you. It was fun.
Curiosity Never Retires is produced by myself, David Flaxman, Andrew Heller, and Jesse Williams, and is presented by OLLI at American University. Our theme music is education music from Background Music for Video by Pixabay. For Curiosity Never Retires, I'm Paul Vamvis. Stay curious.